welcome to another episode of GT Radio. I'm Gino Magnetta. And today on our show, I have an amazing guest with incredible stories, John Dinius, GM Sequan Casino Resort. Hello, John, and welcome.
Thank you so much, Gino.
Hey, so we were talking a little bit before. Usually we come on with our guests 10 minutes before, but we were talking a little bit about the Yellow Pages. You remember the Yellow Pages?
And let your fingers do the walking.
Let your fingers do the walking. And, I mean, how times have changed. So, yeah, that was their tagline. You're right. Let your fingers do the walking. So things have like, just changed so much. And it's incredible how much information we have at our fingertips. So I was just trading stories with John. You know, John, you have a pretty fascinating and unique story. Because you grew up not too far from this casino, and you really never knew much about it, right, at the time when you were growing
up. Yeah, I grew up down in Mission Bay, kind of Bay Park area, until about the middle of seventh grade, and then we moved out here to the East County, and I didn't even realize what a reservation was, and ended up going to high school with a couple of the tribal members, and that's really what started to first expose me to, you know, the tribal life. But I didn't know that there was casinos in California until I was probably 20, 21 years old.
And what? How was it then growing up in that area? What was it like?
Well, it was good. I mean, we tried to go down to the beach as much as we could and surf as much as we could. But, you know, it's a great community out here in the East County. It's a very close-knit community. And just I was actually going to San Diego State University, and I was working for a tax and accounting firm that my friend's dad owned. And you know, we'd work our tails off during the tax season to afford enough money not to have to work too hard during the school year. And one day I just told my boss, Roger, that I needed to find a job, another job. And he's like, why, you're not happy here? And I was like, oh, no, Roger, I love it here. But I've been meeting some pretty good looking girls at San Diego State, but I don't have any extra scratch to take them out. So he used to play poker out at Sequan. And he told me to go out there. And this is well before they had slot machines. And he told me about a position called pull tab clerk that made quite a bit of money. And so went out and, you know, put in an application, which they didn't even have an open position at that time. And one of the gals from HR had encouraged me to, you know, take a different position just to get my foot in the door. And I was like, oh, no, I'm good. I'm about ready to take a little time off from work. So just, you know, give me a call if you have one of those positions open up. And it's about 3 weeks into my little break, and I got the call and, you know, went out and did the interview. And luckily they, you know, they gave me a job. And I guess the rest is history. It was just an incredible environment to walk into. Great community.
What's a pull tab person? What is that?
So, yeah, I realize not a lot of people may remember pull tabs, but imagine just like a lottery scratcher, but instead of scratching it off, you actually turn it around to the backside, and there's five different windows that you peel open. And, you know, if it's three connecting symbols or adjacent symbols, like three cherries would equate to $2, or, you know, three gold pots would equate to $250. And, you know, back then we were working 4 days a week, 6 hours a day, and it was really just like socializing. You know, you just went there to you know, socialize with folks, and they would hand you money. And so it was just, I felt like I stepped into the job of a lifetime.
How now, when we talk about this, paint us a picture a little bit of the environment you were walking into, because the way it is now is very, very different than way back then. It was just a bingo hall, right?
Like most tribal properties, they had to start small and then just continue to reinvest into the property. And for me, it was just almost, I wouldn't say a sprung structure, but it was an aluminum building. And I just remember how much smoke was in that darn bingo hall when I first started working there. I couldn't see from one side to the other. But, you know, it was just, again, a great environment. And I fell in love with not only the team members, but the people as well, both, you know, management and the guests. And it just felt like a big extended family. And I remember when slots first came into the casino, they had just stood up the slot department, and they reached out to me and asked if I was interested in moving over. And I was like, oh, no, I'm good here. Like, I love this job. And shortly thereafter, I'd say in the first week, all of my sales and pull tabs just plummeted, you know, because all the extra money was going into slots. And so I happened to see the department managers playing bingo one night, and I just, you know, went over there with my tail between my legs and asked if there was still an opportunity over in slots. And luckily they still had some positions open and got me a transfer form and actually told me to turn in my bingo stuff right then and there and report to the slot department a couple of days later.
John, what do you think it was about you that that you know made this progression happen from the one position to the other? Because there's going to be a lot of people listening that want to know the details of those progressions. You know, going from one thing and then leaping into something that's a lot bigger. What do you think it was about you that people liked or you know gravitated to?
Well, you know, I think initially probably my personality, although I'm at the core, I'm pretty shy. But I think getting into that environment, it was such an entertainment kind of an environment. So it just, it kind of resonated with me. And I think it was the way that I interacted with folks and hopefully in a genuine way. And I remember taking a break one time in the bingo hall, and this is before the larger casino was built back in 2000, 2001. But one of the tribal members had sat down with me and he asked what I thought about the management team that we had at that time. And I said, with all due respect, I don't think I can answer that question right now. And his response was, well, now you got to tell me. And so I just said, you know what, I'm not too impressed with this group. They don't provide, you know, real strong leadership. They tend to bark orders at us. They don't treat us very well. And I wouldn't want to associate myself with that kind of a group. And the response from the tribal member was, well, isn't that why you should get involved so you could help change that? And honestly, I just went, oh, I should have seen that coming. And, you know, rather than sit on the sideline and complain about it, he encouraged me to jump in and see if I could affect some change. And so I talked to the management at that time and they, you know, asked if I was interested. And I said, absolutely. I just want to know what the qualifications and skill set required would be. And, you know, again, this is back in the time when we didn't have much policy and procedure and the processes weren't nearly as, you know, clearly defined as they are today. And they gave me the opportunity to go out as a slot supervisor. And that was a very exciting transition for me for the most part, except for the money. I remember the very first paycheck I got, I saw the number and I just went, oh my God, what did I do? You know, cause I was used to making, you know, tips and, you know, taking home cash every night. So it was a pretty big transition for me, but I just really enjoyed you know, the fact that you would get a call, you'd have very little information and you at times go into a somewhat of a hostile situation, you know, where it's a guest dispute, for example, and you have to make a very, you know, sound judgment call at times, again, with limited information and try to make a decision that really benefits both the organization and the player as well. And so I just really enjoyed that. And over the years, you know, there was a lot of opportunities thrown at all of our team members. You know, Soquan is an incredible organization that continues to reinvest and develop their internal staff. And so myself and a number of others just continue to take advantage of those opportunities and, you know, try to continue our education and try to learn, you know, from industry professionals and experts and really try to apply those lessons and learn, you know, to how we could improve our organization. And so it was, it's been an incredible journey. It really has, you know, and it's something that I'm so grateful for. I just feel like I'm one of the most fortunate folks in the industry because of, you know, the path that I've been on and the organization that I work for and the people that, you know, are comprise our team. This is not something that I could have done on my own, you know, or in a vacuum. This is really, you know, learning from everybody within the organization, not just, you know, team members, but tribal leadership as well.
John, I know you were raised by a single mother. How do you think that affected, you know, the way you are?
Yeah, I think one of the things, she really gave me a model to follow in terms of hard work. You know, being a single mom, she had a 9-to-5 job, you know, Monday through Friday, but then she also worked a second job, you know, to try to make ends meet. And I mean, even to this day, I'll ask her, like, how did you do that? You know, you came home at like 2-3 in the morning and you were back up at 6 a.m. to go to your next job. And she just said, you know, day to day, you just have to do it because, you know, you've got a family to take care of. And so I think she just instilled in me a lot of hard work and determination and the fact that nothing is going to be handed to you. You've got to work your tail off to achieve whatever you want in life. And then she just really supported whatever direction I wanted to go. You know, she held me to a very, very high standard. But, you know, looking back on it now, it really served me well. And I hope to do that with my children someday.
So you never really had any inkling or aspiration that you would fall into the casino world, right? You just kind of fell into it.
No. There I was actually no, studying. I was studying film in college with a minor in music. I had this grand idea that I wanted to write my own screenplay and be the cinematographer and also control the the soundtrack so I could really manipulate the audience's emotions. And, you know, it just got to a point where, you know, I was going to school and I started to, you know, need to make ends meet, if you will. And again, just had some opportunities presented to me out at Saquon that I just you know, I felt like I had to take advantage of and really see what I could do with those opportunities. And looking back on it now, it was some of the, you know, best decisions I ever made throughout my career.
John, what was the, paint a picture a little bit about what it was like on the Revs, you know, back when you started. Give us a picture of the infrastructure and the lay of the land. And, you know, because this is most of the, this is the kind of the same thing for every tribe when they started, what they had. A lot of people don't know that they virtually had very, very little. Paint us a picture a little bit.
Well, you know, there wasn't much infrastructure. You know, they had a small medical facility, small dental facility, but, you know, some dirt roads. I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot of infrastructure. And, you know, I didn't really experience a reservation prior to 1983, you know, when the times were even tougher. But when I joined the team in 93, it still wasn't built up to the degree that it is. And, you know, over those years, it's amazing how much they continue to not only reinvest into the casino and that piece of the organization, but the tribal reservation as a whole. And they've got great infrastructure now. We've got, you know, it's almost like a small city. And we've got our own fire department and police department, medical dental facilities. And it's not just for the reservation. It's really to assist the local community as well. And I think, again, it just speaks to the Kumeyaay way and the fact that they continue to help out the community. And, you know, to see how far they've come in these short, call it now 35 years, going on 35 years, it's very inspiring to be a part of this organization. And, you know, this is very much different. You know, government gaming, as our chairman Martinez always speaks to it, government gaming is a lot different than corporate gaming because the profits don't necessarily go to shareholders. They go back to the community to build this infrastructure and to support essential government services. And so it just, I think, heightens the level of respect that we have for the entire tribe and the amount of passion that we bring to the organization to try to do the best we absolutely can.
Yeah, it's a lot different. John, what qualities does a person need to rise into a leadership position like a GM or any position of leadership? What are those qualities that are essential?
Well, that's a loaded question there, pal, but I'd say patience, number one. You know, you have to have patience. You have to have a passion for, you know, really helping other people achieve goals that maybe, you know, have nothing to do with you. Really, I guess having the ability to have difficult conversations and make difficult decisions, and then try to get others to share the vision that you have. And I think that's at times one of the more difficult things because oftentimes folks are, you know, well, what's in it for me? And you have to try to instill in them the bigger picture and try to get them to aspire to that same goal or objective. And oftentimes that can be difficult because I know when I was younger, I didn't have the kind of, you know, purview or perspective that I have today. And it's funny now, you know, we were talking before the show that I'm 46 and it's interesting to me that some of the folks that are my age, they talk about these millennials and, you know, they're like these young whippersnappers don't know the value of a hard day's work. And I just laugh and smile and just say, well, guys, that's what they said about us when we were their age. So let's be patient. Let's try to communicate with them and explain to them, you know, some of the decisions that we're making and some of the nuances within this business, because it is very dynamic. And I think when you can have candid conversations and honest communication with folks, then I think that develops a level of trust and confidence in the relationship. And once you establish that, then the sky's the limit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree 100%. The trust thing is the trust and the patience is very important. Definitely important qualities. John, how do you see the state of gaming today, and specifically in Southern California, which is also a market that is coveted by Vegas, right? So how do you see, where are we at today?
Well, I think it's an exciting time. It's a very mature market at this point, and quite frankly, a very competitive market. You know, there was really just three competitors in the Southern California area where we are in San Diego County for quite some time. And then when Jamul moved into the backyard, it really, I think, forced us to reevaluate, you know, how the market felt about us and how we wanted to be positioned in the market. And that I guess, inspired us to do some market assessment studies. And that was some difficult information to digest. And, you know, we had some shortcomings we knew. And at that point in time, we felt like we had maximized just about everything we could do with our current facility. And so we had to get creative. And we actually took some of the comments that we got from that and created 13 different value statements and created 13 different strategic teams within our organization that was comprised of team members from every level, every department, and every shift. And we really wanted to engage our staff in resolving some of these issues that we were having. You know, it doesn't make any sense for us to make decisions in a vacuum. We wanted to go to the folks that do these jobs on a daily basis and really try to get their input because they're the ones who were, you know, talking with our customers day in and day out. And I'm really proud to say that that's allowed us to elevate our position in the market and even with the current facility. And now to think that we've got the expansion on the horizon opening in March of 2019, I think it gives our organization and our team a lot more tools in our tool belt to really captivate the market. Because prior to, or even now, I mean, we've got very few food and beverage offerings. So it's really, I know this sounds negative, and I don't mean it that way, but a grind joint. You know, it's really just the gambling aspect. And to think that we're now going to have all these other amenities that can drive the traffic in, and then we can hopefully captivate them with how we treat people. It's a really exciting time for us. And I think that the market's healthy. You know, the economy's doing great. So, you know, there's a little bit more discretionary dollar that can be spent in the casinos. And it's just this level of competition has just really inspired us to elevate our game. And I think it's doing that for everybody. So I think the ultimate result is that you're going to have a better casino experience than you would have a few years ago due to that competition.
Yeah, it raises the bar, right?
Absolutely. You know, at the core of it, though, Tino, it's really about our people. You know, we always talk about everybody knows where to buy slot machines. Everybody knows what kind of table games to get. We all have somewhat similar F&B offerings, but it's really about the people and the interactions and the engagement that our team members have with our guests. And, you know, we call them guests because it's like we welcome them into our home. And there's folks out in our area that will come 6 and 7 days a week. So it's not like a transient market like Las Vegas. You know, we've got the same folks coming in every day. And so it becomes, you know, part of our extended family. And I think that really is a unique quality to Southern California and Sequon in particular.
Right, yeah. They feel like this is a place where they can feel like it's their place. It's part of
Absolutely.
Who they are, right?
Absolutely. Yep. And I'm not exaggerating when I say and I'm sure other properties do too, but I mean, 6 and 7 days a week, there's a couple that always sits right outside my office and I talk to them daily. And whenever they're talking to a new guest, they say, yeah, we only come here in days that end in Y. You know, and it's they become, you know, advocates for us. And so it takes that level of loyalty to, you know, a different meaning.
Great.
You know, it really becomes affinity. Yeah.
That's great. That's a great one. I like that one. As everything is developing so quickly, and you know there's a lot of development and growth right now, more than we've seen in the last decade, what are some of the things that the tribe should be thinking about for the future with all this growth happening?
You know, I think diversification is a very important concept, you know, for the tribes to really diversify their investments so that they don't have all their eggs in one basket, if you will. But also not forgetting the girl that brought them to the dance, you know, continue to reinvest in the property because ultimately the returns are incredible. And that allows them to, you know, not only continue to reinvest in the organization and the tribal community, but also the local community. And one of the things that we had to double check multiple times, but it's very incredible for me to be able to say that we work with over 700 charities every single year. So it just raises the bar for us. And creates an incredibly feel-good experience for all of our team members to be, you know, even a small part of that giving back to the community. But I would say, you know, continue to work leverage technology. you know, in California as well as around the country, the cost of doing business continues to, you know, get higher and higher with minimum wage and increases in health care. So it continues to compress the profit margin. So, you know, I think we have to continue to look at technology to enhance the overall guest experience as well as the business operations without giving up that one-on-one connection that, you know, our players really require and gravitate toward.
Yeah, somewhere in between the Yellow Pages and the cell phone, right?
Exactly.
Where you still have that... You still have that brick and mortar feel, but it's got all the technology behind it.
Yeah,
that's the way to do
it. Yeah, and you know the customers continue to develop, and you know as the younger generations you know age, and gaming becomes more of a viable option for their entertainment dollar and their entertainment spend. I think that you know we have to be prepared as an industry to you know leverage the technologies that we have and create that experience that will resonate with that younger demographic.
Hmm. Amazing. Who are some of the people that inspired you and why?
You know, I think folks that I work with on a regular basis continue to inspire me, and not just team members internally within the organization, but, you know, also tribal leadership. I think I've always been impressed with as much as the tribal government has going on, they're still so family-centric and so family-oriented. And I just get inspired by that. I was recently, unfortunately, at an event where they were unveiling a headstone. And I walked away from that event just knowing that I was a good dad and a good person, but being inspired to be a better dad and a better person. And I think that the Kumeyaay culture in particular is just so supportive of family situations and challenges and tribulations. And to see the entire community come together and really support another family through a difficult time was, again, just inspiring to me. So other than that, I look to my children. I look to my wife. I look to my mom. Unfortunately, my mom had some health issues last year, and she spent a good 6 or 8 months in the hospital, flatlined at one point. But that gal's a fighter.
Wow.
And we moved her into our house in April. And I'm really happy to say that next month, because she's done so well in terms of her recovery, she's moving out and becoming self-sufficient again. So I look to, you know, our family.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's been an incredible ride, and I'm just really proud of her efforts and how far she's come along.
Yeah, those journeys are not pretty difficult. They're not easy, that's for sure.
Yeah. On the entire
family. Can't imagine what you went through. Yeah, flatlining is never an easy thing to go through, that's for sure.
No, but, you know,
what advice would you
give?
Sorry, say that again.
No. I was just saying that throughout that process, I had nothing but support from the organization. And, you know, I can't say enough in way of how much I appreciated that.
Yeah, I'm sure they were helping you out as much as they could, right? Because they know that's important to your stability and how you move forward in life.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, what advice would you give anyone who's in gaming? And I know a lot of people are trying to make that jump to the GM position. What would you tell them?
You know, I think, again, be patient. There's certain things that you can control and certain things that you can't. So focus on the things you can control and don't sweat the things you can't. That was actually my internal mantra when back in October 2nd of 2014, I was called back from G2E. To take over the interim role. And I remember that I carried that interim title for about 11 months. And people internally at our property would say, well, what's everybody waiting on? Why aren't they just giving it to you? And I just told them, I don't know, but I can't control that, so I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to focus on the things I can control. I really appreciate my experience that I had within slots in particular. You know, being responsible for 85-87% of the revenue in a property like ours is you know, it's a big gig and it's a big responsibility. And I think I learned a lot, not only from that pressure and that stress on a regular basis, but all the folks that I got to meet or have gotten to meet throughout the industry, but specifically with slots. You know, there's a handful of guys and girls that have just been true mentors of mine. And so I hope to give that back, you know, to the younger generation as I continue to age a bit. But, you know, just look out into your community of friends and colleagues and identify some folks that, you know, you respect and inspire you, and try to create a relationship with them, because I think that one-on-one mentoring is just incredible for development. Just having somebody that you can bounce some challenging ideas off of or challenging situations, and really follow your heart and do what you know to be right, even if no one's looking.
Yeah, the sounding board is really important, isn't it?
It is. You know, oftentimes we internalize a lot and compartmentalize a lot because there's a lot going on. It's a very dynamic industry, and you know, oftentimes, specifically with technology, as we had spoke about earlier, you know, you're working 7 days a week, even on vacations, and there has to be a time and a place for you to disconnect as well and really focus on family or you know, something that you get to relax or de-stress or disconnect a little bit.
Okay, this some great stuff here. John, what does the landscape look like in the next 25 years? What does the future in gaming look like?
Oh, boy, I wish I had a crystal ball. You know, I think there's some big decisions on the horizon for tribal gaming in this country, and specifically in California. You know, obviously it applies to us, but, you know, online poker, I think, is still something that needs to, you know, continue to be evaluated. And then, of course, sports wagering and how do we potentially bring that into a tribal casino but not impact the exclusivity that they have within the state? And I think that's a pretty key issue. But I think the state of the industry is very healthy. Again, with the economy doing as well as it is right now, you know, gaming is not necessarily recession-proof, but it's probably recession-resistant. So, you know, even if we have a downturn in the economy, I think we're still going to be fine as long as we continue to focus on the folks that come in on a regular basis and try to create that entertaining experience for them in a way to escape the tribulations of everyday life. I mean, ultimately, that's what we are, is an escape.
John, why do you think gambling is recession resistant?
Well, I think people need a viable outlet to escape the challenges of everyday life. You know, I think regardless of what position we hold in whatever organization, there's going to be frustrating times and stressful times and things that keep you up at night. And I think gaming provides a way to escape, you know. And I remember Bob Dancer talking about the difference between a video poker player and a slot player. And, you know, he gave the analogy of two people driving from, say, San Diego to New York. And the person that wanted to drive the car was the video poker player. They wanted control. The person that was in the passenger seat just looking out the window was the slot player, you know, just wanted to daydream a bit. And I think that's ultimately what, you know, the slot experience allows for people in general. And, you know, couple that with the fact that anytime a guest walks into the property, we want them to feel like royalty. And I think that level of treatment and engagement, I think, goes a long way in solidifying that escape for them.
Yeah, they need something to let loose.
Yeah, absolutely. In a responsible way, obviously.
So, John, I hear you play a mean guitar. Is that true?
Well, I don't know about mean, but I do enjoy playing. I studied actually classical guitar in school, and it's funny, I can't read I studied classical guitar when I was, you know, in school, and I can't read a lick of music anymore, but I can read tablature, and I've progressed onto some pretty difficult kind of progressive rock music these days with different time signatures, and it is one of those few things that allows me to disconnect and, you know, really kind of get into work related. And that's just been an incredible escape for me personally.
That's good, man. Everybody needs that. No question about it.
Yep, definitely.
All right. This has been fantastic. Let's go to the phone calls. We got a lot of them here. There's people calling in. Let's see what we got. Hang on. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have John Dinius on the line. Do you have a question?
Hey, guys. Michael here. How are you guys doing today?
Good. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Very good. Very good. Just heading home from the office, listening to the show.
Great.
A question for John. But yeah, you guys are, your question for John. You're, making that transition from working and kind of, you know, having a slot background, working one department, and then transitioning to over an organization where you're now over areas that didn't necessarily fall within your background coming up in the industry. What, you know, how was that transition, and what advice would you have for somebody that was, say, coming from a marketing background like myself that was stepping into a role like that that had to be over slots, which is an area they don't have an expertise in?
I would say don't fear the overwhelming feeling that you're going to have initially. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of things that you don't know that you don't know. And I would say just be humble and understand that there's a lot you have to learn, and lean on those subject matter experts within the organization that can really provide you the insight and the experience and the knowledge that you'll need to, you know, move forward with that development. I'd also encourage you to, as I had mentioned earlier, create some mentoring relationships with folks within the industry. I can tell you from a slot perspective, there's a number of guys and girls out there that will take you under their wing and teach you about everything they know about the industry. And I think that was one of the things that I really appreciated the most. And I think it'll take you a long way, but just be patient, you know, continue to learn every single day. You're going to develop some pretty bad eyesight because you'll be reading all the time, but I promise you it'll be well worth it in the end.
And patience, right, Mike?
Right, yeah.
Patience.
That you have to have. Appreciate
Mike,
it.
Mike, did you have another question for John?
I miss San Diego terribly. How's the weather?
Right now it's a little bit hot. It's about 85 degrees. We'd prefer it to be 70 degrees with not a cloud in the sky, but we're hoping to get back to that shortly.
it's a balmy 101 up here in Fresno.
Ooh.
Oh, man.
I didn't mean to rub that in, Mike. I apologize.
Thanks. Appreciate it. You guys have a good afternoon.
Thanks,
you
Mike.
Too.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. That was good. All right. We have another call here. Hello. This is GT Radio. I have John Dinius. Do you have a question for him?
Hello, this is Jesse Robles, editor at Pechanga.net and a graduate, full disclosure, of the Sequan Institute at San Diego State. Mr. Dinius, my question I thought was going to be, what sets Sequan apart from what some would call, you know, a saturated market? What sets you guys apart from your competitors? But, you know, as I got to thinking, you know, somebody who visits your property at least once a week, I definitely have to say it's your people and the great staff that you have. So I guess my question really is, how do you instill that culture and that sense of responsibility in your staff that you see every day? Because it's very evident.
Jesse, I appreciate that. And I think our relationship with SDSU is incredible, and it allows us to assist in the development of committed folks like you. So it's wonderful to see how much success you've enjoyed as of the, you know, last couple of years. So congratulations to you, and keep it going, my man. But
John, what is that? Can you explain that to us a little bit?
So, well, a number of years ago, the tribe invested into a hospitality program with San Diego State. So we routinely go to San Diego State and assist with, you know, some of the lesson plans and as it relates to hospitality and casino. So it's just a way to not only educate them about aspects of the business like that, but also some of the tribal history. And again, the differences between tribal gaming and commercial gaming. So it's been an incredible relationship with San Diego State University. Yeah.
Fantastic.
But to answer Jesse's question, I think it develops over time, Jesse. I think that there's a acknowledgement on the part of our organization that the job out there on the casino floor is extremely difficult. And what we try to do is be extremely lighthearted and informal and, you know, joking back of house. You know, we used to have walls that, and I'm not exaggerating, they were actually prison gray. And we've tried to change that up, and we've got extremely colorful walls, and we've got prints of San Diego, images of San Diego everywhere. And we just really encourage people to let loose, and you'll routinely see senior management all the way down to frontline giving knuckles and high fives as they're walking through back of house. And then as you transition from back house to front of house, we actually have on-air signs, you know, and it's just kind of a visual reminder for our team that, okay, all's, you know, good and well back of house, but now you're walking out on the stage and it's time, you know, it's showtime. And so we just try to reinforce that and try to catch people doing the right thing. you know, I recently had a conversation with our new club manager, and that was her comment, is we got to catch people doing the right thing. Oftentimes, I think we focus on the negatives, and, you know, you want to address something that a team member has done incorrectly, but we oftentimes fail to acknowledge the things that they do right on a daily basis. So we're really trying to redirect that focus and again, thank people for their efforts and the kind of impact that they have on our guest experience.
That's fantastic.
That's
thank
great.
You.
Jess, did you have any more questions for John?
That's it. Thank you so much. And you guys are crushing it out there. And I know that every time I go, we were just there last night for dinner for my mom's birthday. And, you know, everybody waves at you. You have your happy birthday pin. And the culture is really strong. So thank you.
That's awesome.
Thank
you,
Jess.
Better look me up next time you come out, too. I'd love to chat with you and say hello again. It's been a while.
Will do. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jesse. Bye. That's fantastic that you guys do that kind of stuff. Wow.
Yeah.
That's really
cool.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We're actually, I think there's a lot of synergies that we can realize, too, between us and San Diego State. And, you know, we've already hired some, but we're, you know, our mass hiring will happen in Q4 of this year, but we're looking to fill 700 positions. So, you know, I think we can get some great, young, talented folks out of San Diego State.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the next caller. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have John Dinius on the line, GT Radio. Do you have a question for him?
Yes. Hi, John. How are you? My name's Susan.
I'm doing good. Hi, Susan.
My question to you is, what does your casino have planned to engage the interest of the millennial generation, or is that not your target market?
You know, it's really not. When we set out to design our expansion, we wanted to, I think, ensure that we didn't alienate our existing clientele. You know, and it was one of those that we operate a very successful business today, but also at the same time, we wanted to grow and be able to cast a wider net, if you will, and attract a different level of clientele as well as the current clientele. So we didn't look at it from really a millennial perspective. You know, I think that there's a certain time in your life where gaming becomes more of a viable spend of your dollar and your entertainment time. And so we're trying to focus on that aspect versus trying to get, say, skill-based games to drive a millennial in. But we really looked at it from a different perspective in terms of just adding incremental amenities. We feel like we're in a bit of a foodie era right now, and food and beverage has become a critical component of driving traffic. And again, with our limited options that we have existing and currently, we felt like that was one of our largest opportunities. So not only are we expanding the gaming floor by about 70,000 square feet, so right now we've got 2,000 slot machines roughly. We'll go to 2,500 Class 3 and 300 Class 2 devices. But we've also got the 300-room hotel so we can have those overnight stays. We've got a 12,000-square-foot ballroom center so we can do huge concerts in there. And then 7 different restaurants from anywhere from fast casual to fine dining. And then we've got our pool and garden area that's got an incredible lazy river that, unfortunately, I'll never be able to actually enjoy. But, We really didn't look at it from a millennial perspective, but really just continuing to reinvest in our property and the overall experience that our guests have and really try to create a full complement. So if you come into our property 6 months from now, you could stay 3, 4, 5 days and do something different each day and still feel like you had a integrated resort experience. So that was really our kind of goal set from the outset.
That's great.
Okay, that's great. Yeah.
Susan, do you have any other questions for John?
One more. John, could you describe a particularly challenging situation that you have experienced in your role as a GM, and how did you overcome it?
Well, I think one of the things that I find difficult on quite frankly, a daily basis at times is managing almost two schools of thought. You know, there's some meetings where we're thinking, you know, very long-term and strategic. And then you leave that meeting and you might have a frontline team member that stops you and asks a question about PTO. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you have difficult meetings, right? And you know, you might be solely focused on that last meeting, but then if somebody stops and asks a question, or, you know, you encounter somebody back house or front of house, you've got to engage. And so I think just trying to manage those kind of two worlds, it can be difficult at times. And regardless of what you have going on in your head or in your personal professional life, it's important to take the time to communicate with others in your organization and you know, even out on the casino floor, because if they approach you, it really means a lot to them. So you need to take the time to show that it means a lot to you as well. But I think that's my mantra, you know, just really, even if it's going to take more time in my day, give them the time of the day to, you know, respectfully listen to their question or their concern and address it. Sometimes you don't have the right answer, but oftentimes just talking through it means a lot. It really does. So,
no, that's
you
that's
have
great.
To be
Thank
able
you.
To. Yeah, thanks a lot, Susan. Really good questions. You have to be able to juggle a lot of things at the same time, right? And different attitudes,
yeah,
different
absolutely.
Characters, from
yeah.
customers to, you know, the tribal council, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and everything in between.
So and everything in between. That's some good questions. Can you go to the next one? Hello, this is GT Radio. I have John Dinius. You have a question for John.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
And one question is, what are your thoughts on all the construction at casinos in Southern California, and how has it impacted your property in the region as a whole competitively?
Well, it's such a competitive market right now, and I think everybody is reinvesting in the overall property. We've had a bit of an advantage, I think, to most properties in way of our expansion, because ours is all west and south of our existing property. So with the exception of a couple of times we've had to close the inbound lanes, the construction really is an impact in the day-to-day casino experience for our players. So, you know, we're still doing phenomenal. We haven't seen huge impact or even nominal impact to our bottom line and our overall revenue stream. So from that perspective, I think we're very lucky. In way of all the construction and the other expansions that are going on, yeah, I'd rather everybody else stop and just let us continue to grow, because we have a goal to be number one, and we want to take our rightful spot on that podium. So, but no, in all seriousness, it just elevates our game. It really forces us to step up and continue to reevaluate everything that we do and the kind of impact that we have on, you know, the guests and the community. And just it inspires us to do our absolute best we can on a daily basis.
That's great.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Do you have another question for John?
I do. Thanks. Yeah. John, other than the competition, what do you think are the biggest challenges for tribal gaming in Southern California, or let's just say maybe tribal gaming in general, in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think there's some big decisions that need to be made as it relates to online poker and probably sports wagering to a more significant degree. You know, I think that there's, you know, they have to protect their brick and mortar investments, and they have to protect the organizations that they've been able to develop and build over the years, and to continue to support the reservation and the tribal people. So, you know, I think diversifying their investments is going to be critical, whether it's real estate or, you know, other businesses. I think it'll continue to be an impact and a challenge for tribes, but the more that they can diversify those investments, the better they'll be long-term.
That's great. Thank you
Perfect.
So much
Thanks,
for calling.
Thank
yeah.
you. Have a good night.
Yes, yeah, thank you.
Okay, great. Let's go to the next caller. Second. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have John Dinius on the line. Did you have a question for him? Hello.
Did we have our first
Hello?
Hang up?
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, there we go.
There
yeah,
we
can
guys.
Now.
Hey, John.
I think there's a delay, a 5 or 10 second delay. So.
Got it. Look, I was curious to know, you know, with this new legislation allowing the sports betting now, you know, outside of Nevada and everywhere else, you know, how do you think that's going to come to play out?
Well, you know, I think that tribes have to be very methodical and deliberate, not rushing into anything. It's a very dynamic potential opportunity. and it's something that we're currently evaluating. But I think that there's a lot of ancillary impacts sports wagering could have. You know, in the state of California, we'll need 2/3 of the legislature approval, but then also the majority of the voters to approve it. And I think it's important that we maintain our exclusivity as it relates to gaming, because ultimately that's, you know, the cash cow, if you will. So it's an exciting opportunity, but there's a lot of factors that go into it. You know, as you know, in Vegas, the margins are very small. And then when you talk about tax rate and potential integrity fee, it further erodes that potential profit. And, you know, I think it's important that the tribes craft a narrative that really explains to people that it's not just about the profitability. You know, we would love to have this amenity to drive more traffic into the property, but there's a number of other potential impacts that could offset that benefit. And it's just a slow going. I think it's going to be a very methodical approach to really seeing how we can make this work and create a framework that works for both the state, the consumers, as well as the tribes. And I think when we get everybody together, we'll be able to do that, but it's just going to take some time. So I think it's probably a couple of years out, but it's definitely something that's being actively discussed at this point in time.
That's great. Have another question for John? Hello, did you have another question for John?
You think it's maybe 2-3 years out before it really has its introduction into the marketplace in California?
Yeah, I don't think you'll see it this year on the ballot, so maybe 19 or 20. But again, I think that there's so much involved. It's such a dynamic opportunity that it's going to take some time to really vet it and understand the legal implications. And as staff, all we're trying to do internally is, you know, do some analysis, some market assessments, some feasibility assessments, and really, you know, even based on limited information at this point in time, and then be able to provide those analyses to our tribal council and our tribal leadership so that they can make the most educated and informed decision possible. So I think that's our role right now, is just compiling as much information as possible so that, again, they can make the best decision for the tribe's future.
Understood. Okay, great. Thanks very much.
No, thank you.
Thanks so much. Great questions. Great stuff. Good stuff. All right, let's move on here, see what we got. Okay. Let's see here. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have John Dinius on the line. Do you have a question for him?
Hi, John. It's Jeff. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. My question for you is there one project or event that you've worked on that you're particularly proud of, and why?
I hate to say this because it is so short-sighted, but I'd say the project that we're working on right now, this expansion was slated actually for 2008. And when the economy did, you know, what it did, the tribal leadership, you know, really kind of pulled the reins on the expansion and decided to shelf that. And we ended up renovating the property. So initially it was going to be, let's expand and then we'll come back and renovate the existing property. And again, when the economy took the downturn, we decided to do the renovation first. So we, you know, continue to reinvest in the experience and the overall organization. And then when the economy started to turn around, it was the expansion, you know, was back on the table. And I think I've just learned so much, and there's so many people, not only on our staff, but with our architects and our consultants, in our construction folks that really want the best for this tribe. And it's been incredible for me to learn, you know, mechanical engineering and plumbing and water issues and just every level of detail working through this collaborative effort and picking, you know, whether it's a tile or a carpet or a lamp or, you know, determining where light switches are going to be and what kind of technology you want in the room to complement that guest experience. I think that's just been very rewarding for me. And once we unveil the new property in March of next year, I think that'll be the cornerstone of my career and one of those things that I can really hang my hat on, you know, in terms of giving back to this organization that's given so much to me.
Yeah, it's a major thing. Did you have another question for John? Hello? Are you there?
I think we lost him.
Yeah, hang on a second. Did you have another question for John? Jeff? Hello? Yeah, I think we lost him. John, you're on, right?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Hang on one second. All right, let's go. Hello?
Hi, John? Yes.
Oh, there you are. Hold on a second. Are you there? Hello, hello.
Hi, do you know?
No, I forgot. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Yep.
Okay, great. Sorry, what were you saying? Do you have another question for John?
You mentioned the importance of having mentors, as you climb the corporate ladder. Can you name drop a few that, you particularly, look up to during your success, your career?
Yeah, there was a few, a group of core guys in the industry that really kind of took me under their wing, like Sean Evans and Tommy O'Brien and Keith Blake and Kevin Vickery, rest his soul. Those guys really, just exposed me to the larger group. I can tell you, when I first got into management, I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed with the size or the perceived size of this industry. And as, I would play golf with these guys or I'd see them at G2E, I think that they just introduced me to other folks within the industry, and I realized that it was actually a small, close-knit group of folks. And, over the years, I'd say Seamus McGill, formerly from ATI, Ross O'Hanley, Casey Whalen. I mean, those are a number of folks that have really had an incredible impact on me. And I feel very, very fortunate to have worked with all the sales executives in California from the slot side. I've learned a tremendous amount from, folks like Danny Malotti and Lauren Bates. Just folks like that I thought were really genuine and didn't make me feel that I didn't know what I didn't know. Just kind of, again, took me under their wing and exposed me to, the rest of the industry. And I can't express my gratitude, enough. And so I would highly encourage you to reach out to folks like that. And again, it's all individual, just find somebody that seems to have a common interest and is willing to, help educate you within the industry. It can be extremely beneficial.
That's great.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, it's important to have a team of people around you that are going to educate you basically on your and are on site, right?
Yeah. Well, and even from other properties too. I think thinking about that question a little bit more too, I think about other operators. And I remember a gentleman by the name of Warren Paddleford from Shoemash, who was an interesting character to say the least. And we were out at Niagara in Phoenix one year, and we were talking about entertainment this and entertainment that. And he looks at me and he says, John, we can call this entertainment all day long, but it's really about compulsive behavior. And it just guys like that, just I really appreciate over the years. And, the folks out at San Manuel and internally within our organization, I mean, it's hard to list everybody. But just listen and learn as much as you can from others and then try to see how that may or may not apply to your own organization or some of the daily decisions that you make.
Yeah, great stuff. Okay, hang on. We got some more here. Hello, this is GT Radio. We have John Linnaeus. Do you have a question for John? Hello.
Hi, John. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
We can now.
Oh, great. A couple of questions. Let me start with the first one.
Are you there? Hello? I think we lost him.
Yeah, I think we lost him.
Yeah. The technology is not perfect with this stuff, so let's, we'll try it again. We'll try it again. All right. This is GT Radio.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, yep. Now we can.
I think I lost you over there. You mentioned a little bit before about diversification overall. Can you mention some specifics that your tribe is doing for diversification, you know, for your specific property?
Yeah. You know, I think a couple of the biggest investments that they've made over the time that I've been there outside of the organization would be purchasing the U.S. grant, which if you've ever been, if you've never been
absolutely
to San Diego and
no,
yeah,
I'm
the U.S. grant.
SBG clients I usually do stay there. So it is a great property.
Yeah, that's one of the ones that I think is a bit of a flagship for tribal investments. And then have you ever seen the resort, the golf resort?
At the same property or at the Quan?
No. It's about 3 miles down from the casino, but it's in the Gila
okay.
Valley. It's used to be called Singing Hills Resort. Now it's the Quan Resort. But, yeah, it's 54 holes. There's 36 championship holes, and then there's an 18-hole par 3. I think those two properties are really, you know, again, the kind of flagship of the investments. But they've also got some other real estate investments. We're doing what we call Saquon Square down at the three-way stop just before you get to the casino. So there'll be a gas station and a C-store, and there'll be some future development to allow some opportunities for retail in that area as well. So it's just, it's really about kind of developing the local community. I think those would be the two largest, though, the U.S. grant and the golf course.
How come you think that other properties, you know, don't have kind of the same insight and, you know, aren't doing the same thing? Is there kind of something restricting them or?
Well, you know, I think that that's just individual to each tribe. I think every tribe has their own challenges and their own goals. You know, one of the things that I've been extremely impressed by is the master planning that happens at Saquon. You know, they've really got a vision that they want to execute in the next 10 to 15 years. And then once you know what that long-term vision is, then you just work backwards incrementally from there and create shorter milestones or goals to help achieve that overall goal. But, you know, I think it a lot depends on the kind of revenue that the property drives, the number of tribal members that are, you know, within that respective tribe and a whole slew of other challenges or impacts that may influence those decisions. So I just think it's very individualized to each tribe and really what their overall goals and vision is.
Great.
Okay, great.
Thanks so much for calling. Thank
Thanks.
You.
Yeah, thank
All right,
you.
Let's see who else we got here. I think we've got time for one more. Hello, this
hey.
Is GT Radio.
Hey,
hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now. How are you?
Good. It's Haiti and Tizana. Hi, John. Hi, Tino.
How you doing, Haiti? How are you?
I'm good. Good to hear you.
Really well. Great. So, John, I want to know two things. What do you know today that you wish you knew 10 years ago?
That is a great question. I'm drawing a blank on that one. Let's go to the second one and I'll come back to that one.
Okay, so a woman 3 years from today. All right. So what are you know, there's so much expansion going on in the casino and the hospitality industry and native tribal casino especially, but I say that no one has left a casino or a hotel saying the service, the guest experience was so bad, but the lobby was full and I'm going to come back. So I heard you say earlier that you want guests to feel like royalty. So what do you feel in the experience that you give your guests? Maybe give me an example, give us an example. What is it that you are doing, your team is doing, that just elevates that experience to another level? Because you're such a competitive industry.
Yeah, that's a great question, Haiti. And I think it's really about the genuine interaction and engagement that occurs between our team and the guests. And I think it has to be genuine. As I mentioned earlier, everybody knows where to buy the slots and table games, and we all have very similar facilities, and it really
right.
comes down to that interaction. And you can feel when it's fake, when somebody's just reciting, you know, verbiage like a robot, and it just doesn't feel genuine. And then we've all had those experiences where you walk away and go, you know what, I'm going to write a note to that person's supervisor because, you know, she answered all my questions and it was genuine. And one of the things that we really like about San Diego in particular is that you could go to the highest high-end restaurant downtown San Diego and you're still going to see somebody in Vans and some jeans. And so we're trying to create this kind of concept of approachable luxury. You know, somebody that can come in any attire and be treated like royalty. And so we're trying to inspire our team to do that with each and every interaction that they have. And Haiti, as you know, there's a number of team members that every guest will interact in or interact with. And you could be 9 out of 10, but on that 10th one, if you fail, the whole experience is a failure. So it's really about that consistent, driven vision to try to get to 100% every single time. And I think that, you know, we've been successful over the years in firing our team to do just that. But, we've got another level to take it up to, and we're really excited about what the future holds for us.
I love it. I love your concept, approachable luxury. I might have to steal that for one of my posts.
All right.
Authenticity and non-scripting is did you come to mind about what you know today you wish you knew 10 years ago?
Well, I hate to keep going back to my kids, but I didn't realize how inspired I would be by my children. You know, I growing up as a single an only child with a single mom, I didn't think I was cut out to be a dad. And I remember after having our son, I was telling somebody at work how incredibly what the incredible shift was when you have kids, and every thought I have in my head and every decision I make has my son in the back of my head. And they said, well, that's great, but boys tend to be pretty independent, not just move out of the house, but move away, you know, sometimes out of state. And I remember coming home that night telling my wife we needed to have another one and we needed to have a girl. And so just to have those two children that really push me on a daily basis and just give me the love, the same love as I give them, I think I never would have realized how rewarding that experience truly is.
Love it. Wonderful.
Yeah, that's
Thank
a great
you
answer.
So much. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Haiti. Thanks
you.
For calling in. Okay.
Thank you, Haiti.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's it's a great thing about children. It's the impact it has on your life is incredible, isn't it?
It is. It's dramatic. And I think it ultimately, when you get to my age, it's really what drives you on a daily basis. So, yeah, I'm so appreciative and fortunate to be where I am today.
John, it's been wonderful, and I'm glad we ended up on that note with that conversation, because that's a really important thing. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and hopefully we'll have you back on again.
Great. Tino, thank you so much for the opportunity, and thanks to all the callers. Those were some great questions, and I'll get you back, Haiti, for stumping me on that first one.
All right, buddy. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good night. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. That was fantastic. John, definitely interesting guy with an interesting story. July 26th. We have another great show, and I'm so excited with this. Carrie Spooner from The Cosmopolitan. She's also a good friend and great person. She's got some great stories, and she's a real character. Remember, someone's always got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen to it. You have a great night, and God bless.